Music Session number 106.13, Rule 3.
Mr. Charles Burden Taylor, Reel 3. How did the men react to the formation of the carrier platoon? They were selected for it. Did they like the new development?
Oh, very much so. Now, this was something completely new, and I think they jolly well knew that those people who were selected were rather special, and that there was something, they had new tasks ahead that they hadn't been experiencing before, and really their, I would say, excitement was the true word. And when we got our first carrier, that was something which everyone wanted to drive it, but not only that, but everybody wanted to clean it and keep it in absolutely tip-top order, which they did. And there's no question of, what can I say, putting down as drills. Sunday mornings, and many of the time that I was late home for lunch, because the lads were out and they wanted more driving instruction, more training, and they'd give as much time as I could give to work with them.
You could already drive, I presume?
Yep.
And were you involved in helping train the men to drive?
Oh, yep.
How did you go about it? Did they take to it easily?
Well, they took to it very, very easily. In those days, bear in mind that nowadays a lot of your vehicles are synchromesh or automatic gearboxes and so on. In those days, a lot of cars, well, certainly the first gearing cars, were just on a certain crash basis. In other words, you had to use your clutch if you were going to get into it. Well, this was the same sort of thing, the crash box. And a lot of lorry drivers at that time were on the same basis of using crash boxes. So it really, most of them, what they had to learn really was to work the question of how to work the tracked vehicle as opposed to a wheeled vehicle. And if you're turning, you had to change down really and heighten the revs to get the power to turn around, particularly on, you know, grass, shall we say, where it would dig into the turf. But no, they took like a duck to water, and they were all absolutely first class, and as I say, keen as mustard. It wasn't just a question of driving. But there's one occasion which I must say we had to surrender the carrier for another unit to go to camp, and we did this very reluctantly, and I must say I was warned by the adjutant, don't expect to see it quite in its beauty when it comes back, which was, I was rather thankful for, because when we got it back it was really in absolute, well, shit order really, and the faces of the lads were really, they were not a treat to see, because they really felt hurt about it. But very soon we got clean painted up and cleaned up and all the rest of it.
That would be in 39, wouldn't it? Because you didn't have a summer camp in 39.
No, we didn't have a summer camp. This must have been some of the earlier camps that other units had gone to. We, in turn, if we'd gone to camp, would have drawn 9 carriers from other units.
You only had the one carrier then?
Only one, yep.
And would everybody in the carrier platoon learn to drive?
Oh, yes, yes.
So they could change places depending on what...
Not only that. I mean, we all had to fire a Bren gun and up to the best standard, but we all had to do everything that everybody else could do.
What did you think of the Bren as a weapon?
A good weapon, very. Some say it was too accurate from the point of view of... if you compare it with the old Lewis gun, but they had so many stoppages that it's not true. But they weren't so accurate, so that the beaten zone, in other words, the receiving end of the bullets, in fact, was over a wider area, and some say it was more efficient from that point of view. On the other hand, the Bren was a very good weapon, and very reliable.
So you were working on this throughout, after the Annex summer camp in 38, you received the carrier in late 38.
I think that's right, yes.
Working on it through until you were called up in the key parties in August 39,
yep.
With this one interval when it went away.
That's right.
Were you aware of the approach of war by then? Did you follow foreign affairs, the German threat,
yes.
Munich, all this sort of thing? Were you following it?
Yes, I think when perhaps not to the same extent, obviously, because age changes one, but I remember going back, for that matter, to our last OTC camp at school, because outside of two of the OTC officers' tents, we put the sort of Evening Standard or whatever the newspaper was. One was, you know, Hitler and Mussolini, so we recognised even at that age that there was a certain amount going on and of danger. But just as a sideline, we put outside one tent, we put the sign Hitler, outside the other tent, Mussolini. But no, I think that it was apparent that something was going to happen. But they were fairly carefree days, I think, then. And one did one's work. Thomas Hedley's used to finish at 4:30, so you almost had a day, you know, in which you could either play sport or whatever, or for that matter go after your TA unit. But there was certainly a threat. We knew that something was coming. We'd had the piece of paper in 1938 with Chamberlain, and in a way I think the country was pretty convinced that war might be averted, or shall we say that we thought it might be averted. But towards the end of August we were called together and told that the key parties would be called up.
What was your assessment of your training at that point? Do you think you were trained to an adequate level to actually go to war?
I would say probably not, purely on the basis of... we didn't have any of this, what can I say, if you like, brutal killer-type training. We had certain night schemes at camp, and we were out in all weathers, so we weren't really sort of namby-pambies at this, but... Looking at my regular experience, we had far more, I think, of the rough and tumble of outdoor life, if that's the best way of putting it. I think the other side of the coin, which I very soon found out, all the accent of training was on the, shall we say, operations side, before in your toots. You had to remember sort of that rations were needed, but... in our working in the TA, we had very little, at least I as a subaltern, until I was made a company commander, had very little contact with the administrative side of life. So that, as I say, it was all, shall we say, attack, defence, tactics, and fitness, and not so much administration. But you soon, very soon picked it up. You had to pick it up.
How did the doubling of the TA affect you?
Well, directly at that time, that was in 1938, it didn't affect me personally at all. But, of course, the doubling of the TA, in fact, involved duplicates throughout all our companies and all our drill halls. So, in effect, later on, I found that I had two companies to control. But that was only for a very short time. But I think it affected... it gave us... It confirmed very much that this sort of Hitler and Mussolini getting together did mean some form of business, because we wouldn't be doubling the TA if we weren't concerned, despite Mr. Chamberlain, that something might happen.
Were you aware that you'd be serving overseas? Because prior to the First World War, not everyone had realised that the territorials would be on, overseas.
Yes.
Did you realise that this was... that you would be fully involved in the war?
I don't think... fully involved, yes, but I don't think that cropped up as a thought. I would say it depends at what time. I think when we were called up, we reckon, right, the sky's the limit. We might find ourselves wherever the British Army is stationed on a regular basis.
Let's go on to that. You were called up as a key party in August 39,
late. That's right, yes.
What exactly was that, and what was your role? What were you doing?
Well, what happened, really, is that in office... with Thomas Hedley's at one point in time, and message saying that we had to get ourselves off to Durham, that the colonel was having a conference. And we all went down there in the evening, and he said that it looked as though war was imminent, and that key parties would be called up. At that time, Moseley Martin, known as Moke Martin, who was my company commander as a captain, he was away, so I was told that I must get the key parties organised at Stanley. Well, all the people had, in fact, been warned that they would be called up. And so we all just closed in on our respective drill halls. I went to Stanley, and I had, I think, two officers of C Company with me, and a certain number of key personnel, like Company Sergeant Major, Colour Sergeant, certain storemen, and that sort of thing, all ready to be able to take on war kit.
And these people, including yourself, were released from work by Thomas Headley.
On the spot, One day...
Headley's didn't mind, of course.
Well, they didn't have much option. I think that's the best way of putting it. So actually, they were very good, incidentally. They used to give us a fortnight's TA camp, and we could have our fortnight's holiday as well.
So what exactly were you doing at Stanley as a key party? What exactly did you do?
If one can just say that normally you had the company based on the Stanley drill hall, and you'd normally carry out your training week in, week out, and so on. And on this occasion, it was a question of getting ready to receive the full allotment of kit for the company, what we in fact termed the G10-98 was the number of the form, which listed all everything that you have in a company, or in any organization, in the army for that matter. Number of pots and pans, number of rifles, number of weapons, all stores. And we got ready really to get our maximum of things that we needed to work on a war footing.
And what exactly did that entail? I'm not quite sure what you'd have to actually do to get
well,
ready to receive
this
something.
Really was mainly the quartermaster, the colour sergeant's job, from the point of view of the administration of getting in stores, checking stores, taking stores on charge, in other words, receiving, acknowledging that you've got them, for that matter, noting any that may be missing that we're not up to store a standard on, if we're short to limit on ammunition or something like that, then it's got to be checked and reported back. We had to get ready to feed ourselves, which at that time was slightly comic, because the Royal Army Service Corps, who would normally produce our rations, not operating, so we worked on the basis of ration allowance, and we used to draw so much per head, which was magnificent, because we could feed Johnnyside better by cash and cash purchases than we would have done with army rations. And for that matter, we had one or two chaps in the company who were one particular fellow I remember whose father was a butcher, and we used to put all our business through him, because we got jolly good rates and quite a lot of, I think, extra that perhaps we shouldn't have had at that time. Well, this is the beginning of the war, there was no rationing at that time.
Now, you were getting, so this stuff was coming in, and you were, where were you keeping it? In the drill hall?
Yeah.
Storing it
We also, I didn't actually take it over, but the local Greyhound Stadium, which was next door to the drill hall, was requisitioned, and we used that for a while.
Was that actually before the war started?
No. This was on, on war, just before, literally just before, I think. But after the key parties, that's the main point.
So your key party, would they also be warning and making the arrangements for the mobilisation in the sense of the telegrams and all that sort of thing?
Oh, yes. No, that the documentation side, that's what you're getting at. No, in that case, can I say that from the point of view of rations, from the point of view of 1098 equipment, from the point of view of, shall we say, cooking stores and that sort of thing, all the paperwork related to personnel, calling up Tom Jones and so on, medical inspections, etc., 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 all that had to be laid on, ready for a certain point as to when it would happen.
So that's what you were doing?
Oh, yes, yes.
Now, how long were you doing that?
It was about, I think, about 10 days.
So it was...
A week or 10 days.
And what do you remember of the actual mobilisation? I think that happened on the 1st, didn't it?
Was it the 1st or the 3rd?
The war broke out on the 3rd.
Oh.
But I think they were mobilised on the...
That could have been mobilisation. Well, that makes... 24th, 7th, 4th, 11th. Yes, just about a week. That's about it. Yeah. Actually, the main recollection of that was on our first route nights when we were all, in fact, mobilised. Because there was one recce aircraft or something went over, and the whole country was, you know, all the sirens went off, and this was the beginning of the sort of all-out bombing. And I remember, since then, I felt a bit stupid, but diving into the hedge with the whole company, going on to air raid precaution, you know, action, and flipping plane was at least 20,000 feet. Unlikely to do us a great deal of harm at that time, only one.
So, did the mobilisation go according to plan, as far as you were
As far concerned? As I was concerned, yes. I can't remember anything that really went wrong. I mean, we had our full complement of everything we needed. In fact, at that time, we probably had more, because a certain number of people, although in the TA at that time, were either unfit or... when I say unfit, it doesn't mean necessarily for TA, because some would be graded home only, and which means that they couldn't go overseas, which meant, of course, they would have to go somewhere else, as far as we were concerned, or holding battalion.
And now, Captain Martin was still not there at this time.
He was away at the time, yep.
So your responsibility was the C Company. Were you still responsible for the carrier plane?
Yes, yep.
And what about the doubling up?
Well,
who was running those?
I thought you might ask that. I can't remember the name of the company commander, but what it amounted to for a short time, because I was the youngest, as it happened, but I was the senior, as a second lieutenant, of the whole party there. So I had both, in fact, for a short while, to look after. And that was in Moak Martin's absence. But on mobilisation, he had a mobilisation job, a preordained job, which was to go off to 50 Div headquarters as a staff officer.
So this initial period, the men were billeted in the drill hall and the grounds.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And they were being fed by the system of buying food.
That's right, yeah. We also had attached to us, I think it was four, but they were then ATS, and basically for cooking. They weren't really too much. They were great help in many ways, and at first a lot of eyebrows were raised, but no, they fitted in, and they were billeted out. Actually, they didn't live what's in the drill hall.
And what happened in this first month or so before you went to Oxfordshire in October?
Yeah.
What kind of did the training change up here? Were you doing a different sort of activity or?
I think that the main point was to get everyone fit, sort out the medical side, so that a person may appear to be fit, shall we say, but would be downgraded to home only. Brigadier Jackie Churchill was all for getting us mobile, I think, and we were doing two route marches a week, ready to get hardened in to that sort of movement, even though we were a motor division. Other than that, we dug, did a lot of digging of air raid trenches in front of the drill hall. And other than that, was really normal training. Carry on your basic training. We're getting near the end, really, of the season, where we'll be coming up to company training and battalion training. At that time, everything had to be... I think you're right when you said it had to be hastened, it had to be speeded up. We were in full time, so no nonsense of having two periods in the evening twice a week, but we were working all day, and certainly when we got down to Charlbury, we were also having evening work too.
It might be a good point to have a look at the office. What did you think of Colonel Leyburn, who was the commander, the colonel at that
yep.
time?
What kind
of man was he?
He was a most likable man, and... frankly, as far as I was concerned, and I'm sure a lot of people would agree with me, he appeared to be far less fearsome a person than Colonel Phil Kirkup. Because Colonel Phil Kirkup was a biggish guy, he was bigger than Colonel Angus Leyburn, shall we say, perhaps a booming voice from memory, and whereas Angus Leyburn was a quieter man. But, you know, a lot of people can be very quietly efficient. They don't have to bash the table, and nor did Phil Kirkup for that matter. But they're two slightly different characters.
You found him an efficient officer then?
I liked him, yes. And at that time, I don't think I would be in a position to really doubt his efficiency.
What about
he mobilised us tremendously well, sorry.
What about Andrew Clark? He'd also be the adjutant. He'd be very involved in the...
Oh, very much so, yeah. And, that was rather interesting because he was KOSB, which we were always a little bit disappointed if we didn't get a DLI adjutant, but those were the times, and he was a pleasant. I think he was jolly efficient. He later went on and commanded the 9th Battalion, I think, in Sicily, and was killed there, which was very sad. A very nice fellow. I don't think that he had quite the sense of humour that would go along with mine, but that doesn't mean that he wasn't an efficient adjutant and looked after us very well.
So you were going through this period of reorganisation, I think, and then you were actually posted away, weren't you? The battalion was moved on from Stanley.
Yes.
Did you join together first, or did you, as a battalion, or did you go from Stanley to Oxfordshire?
We went individually from... as you were, that's the wrong way of putting it. We were dotted about all over the area as companies and with battalion headquarters in Durham. But we moved, in effect, en masse. We didn't all go to Durham and, shall we say, get on a train there. And we moved from our present locations to stipulated locations in Oxfordshire. We had advance party people sent on. There were people from each company, each department, for that matter. And they went to Enston, Spilsbury, Charlbury, and the various areas in which companies were located in Oxfordshire. And, of course, the transport went down on wheels. A lot of funny wheels, too, because we had a lot of impressed vehicles. We hadn't got all our proper Army WD vehicles at that time. And so some of the vehicles were civilian vehicles, impressed.
And you got the other 9 carriers? By that time.
The carrier platoon was then really under Sergeant Craggs. But by this time I'd been told to take over Charlie Company in an acting capacity, which I did. And the carrier platoon went to Charlbury, and my C Company went to Spelsby, which was a few miles away. And then we handed over to Ian English.
That's where that handover took place.
That's right, yeah.
How did you settle in at... you were at Spelsbury, you say. How did you settle in there? How did the training programme develop?
Much the same, really, as it had ever in the past, because we had a pretty free hand in where we went. We had to establish ourselves a 30-yard range, and, of course, once you get a thing like a war, I think the regulations are somewhat relaxed, and... where we had a 30-yard range, which was perfectly safe, as long as somebody didn't go mad with a rifle. But it wouldn't be allowed nowadays, from a safety point of view. So we had, if you like, short-range shooting. We could go anywhere, so we did our platoon and company training. We carried on our weapon training. We had the village hall, which was a great help, that we dined in, but we could also use for lectures and that sort of thing. So really, it was carrying on as before. Oh, that was the time, incidentally, as a sidetrack, that we moved a barrel of beer from Scottish Newcastle Breweries then, down to Spelsbury. And we're a very popular company. The only company with Newcastle ale.
Now, that may have made you popular, the company, popular with other officers and men, so to speak, but there was a problem, I think, that had developed within the company, and you developed a new method, or a method new certainly to you, of dealing with that. Would you like to describe it? They had tick sessions, I think you told me.
Yes. I think this wants to be divided into two. What I'll tell you is, if you like, the first tick session, but the later sessions that I ever had were not related to this first one, because this was perhaps very original, and certainly very much a one-off job, and thank goodness I've never had to do it since. But this was something that we settled in at Spelsbury, and I don't know, I just had some gut feeling that things were not going quite as smoothly as they should be. There's nothing wrong with the lads, there's nothing wrong with the officers, nothing wrong with the company sergeant major or the colour sergeant. They're all extremely good people. But there was something wrong. And so I decided to take what to a lot of people would be an unusual step. And our officers' mess then was in the annex of a house. And so I got all my platoon commanders, their platoon sergeants, company sergeant major and the colour sergeant into the mess. And I think we might have had a cup of tea or something like that. But I expressed my unease that something was just not working right. There's a feeling that I had that we were not top of the world, which we should be. And I invited them all to absolutely speak their mind, say whatever they wanted to say, but once they left this room and whatever decisions we'd made, then it never had to be spoken to again. And basically, this is about the first time that I've spoken. But the main thing is that the company sergeant major was the first, and he reckoned that I was rather apt to get too much down to detail and in work that was his responsibility. So would I keep off the grass, that's really what he was saying, on anything which he felt was his job. And we discussed this later, and I could see what he meant, and he's quite justifiable in putting that viewpoint.
What kind of thing did he
do? Well, there are certain things, particularly sending in returns, strength states, six states, and so on and so forth. This is earlier on, you remember I mentioned the question that we weren't really taught a great deal of administration. Okay, a lot of the administration in your company is the colour sergeant's job and the company sergeant major's job. There are certain other things that are essentially company commander, like writing reports and so on. But I was treading on his toes and his work. A similar sort of background came out from the colour sergeant. And really, I can only remember mostly of what things affected me. But then the platoon sergeants had their opinion of what they wanted to say. And the only little flaw in the ointment, no names, no patrol, but one of them said that he thought his platoon commander was a bit of a shit. And he explained why, which was not unreasonable, but it was rather he was a very young sergeant, but a very good one. And so we left that, we discussed it, and we discussed one or two other points that were brought up both by the company, both by the platoon commanders and by the platoon sergeants. And they had a cross-reference with their opposite numbers in other platoons. And we had a good old, canny, sensible get-together. And we discussed personalities, we discussed methods, we discussed training generally. And then we left the mess, and that was that. And frankly, I don't think we put a foot wrong. After that, we went off to France, and later on I handed over to Captain Johnny Walton, and we sailed it on, and as far as I was concerned, we had no problems.
So this new method that you was effective?
Very effective, very much so.
Was it frowned upon at all from above?
No, nobody knew anything about it. This had to be secret. As I mentioned a moment ago, it's one of the very few times that I have mentioned this happening. But if it does come out, I reckon it's nothing, not nowadays, it's not new nowadays, but in those days, I suppose, have been hauled over the coals for doing something which was, to some people's eyes, wrong. You just don't do these things. On the other hand, as far as I'm concerned, it met the aim, and it put the company on a happier footing, and we just didn't look back after that.
So, in a sense, it was to air the grievances, to clear the air, and to try and put...
That really, that's how it turned out. But in those days, you didn't have that sort of thing. The other tick session, incidentally, I said there must be two separate items in this, and that is that later times I used to have a period in the week when I used to leave aside when I could have my whole unit together, and we would have a fair chit-chat. And
when did that system develop?
I think... That I started with 9 DLI in Germany after the war.